Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
The FT.
Welcome to World Weekly with me, Ben Hall. On the show this week, we'll be looking at Nigeria and the militant Islamist insurgency that has grabbed the world's attention in recent days. Nigeria's status as the new economic powerhouse of Africa was supposed to be the talking point of a meeting of African leaders and top executives in Abuja this week. Instead, the world is in uproar about the government's slow, and some may even say indifferent, response to the abduction of more than 200 schoolgirls by the Boko Haram Islamist terrorist group last month. Western governments have become increasingly concerned by the upsurge in attacks and by the Nigerian state's apparent inability to deal with the militant threat. Joining me down the line from Nigeria is William Wallace, the FT's Africa Affairs writer, and with me in the studio in London is Javier Blas, the FT's Africa editor. William, can I come to you first of all? Talk us through what happened with the latest incident regarding these 200 or more schoolgirls.
On the same day that a bomb blew up a crowded bus station in Abuja, marking the first time in a long time that Boko Haram has been able to strike the capital, large numbers of Boko Haram gunmen stormed a school in a remote part of the northeastern state of Borno. And dressed as soldiers, they persuaded an unknown number of girls, in fact, but more than 200, to come out of their dormitories. And they then burnt the school down and took off with the girls in a series of trucks. At an early stage, about 50 of the girls were able to escape. But it's thought that as many as 276 are still in captivity somewhere, either in a remote part of Borno State, which has very difficult forested, desert, and also mountainous terrain, or some of them may even have been trafficked already across the border into Chad and neighbouring Cameroon.
Why have the Nigerian authorities not been able to track them down? Is it because the area is remote, it's too risky, or do they just worry that they lack the capacity to take on this group?
Well, according to security officials here, the military has followed multiple leads in their attempt to find the girls. This has been complicated, however, by the fact that some villages in that area, large parts of which are effectively ungoverned, have been infiltrated by Boko Haram. And in other villages, people are too terrified of reprisals to collaborate with the authorities. So the search has been hampered partly by that. It's also been hampered by huge amounts of confusion about how many girls were taken, how they were able to be taken. But clearly, at the very outset, the military was slow to respond, although some soldiers in the area reportedly did put up something of a fight before the gunmen were able to get to the school.
Javier, if I come to you, Boko Haram is not the only Islamist militant group in Africa, but it certainly seems the most bloodthirsty. Is this now the biggest threat to regional peace?
Certainly is the biggest threat that Nigeria is suffering. But if we look at Boko Haram, all the attacks have been so far very much concentrated in this remote area of northeast Nigeria that William is describing. They have not been able to attack Abuja, the capital, in 2 years. Indeed, the recent bombing was the first time that it happened really since 2012. So at the moment and so far has been very much a national problem. We are not talking here about the risk of Al-Shabaab in the eastern part of Africa, where has been able to attack multiple countries with attacks in Nairobi, Kenya, Uganda, Somalia, and threats also into Tanzania. And neither is able to mount the attacks that we have seen from Al-Qaeda in the Maghreb, where we have seen attacks from Mali to also Algeria, and potentially also being involved in Libya. So far, Boko Haram has been mostly a local problem for Nigerian authorities. authorities. I'm very much targeting Nigerian targets rather than international targets. There have been some incidents involving also international targets. So I would not say that is the biggest threat for peace and stability in the region, but certainly they are grabbing the attention with very spectacular attacks, grabbing the headlines and really hitting in a moment where there was a lot of international attention for a good reason into Nigeria.
Yes, I mean, the fact that most of their attacks or all of their attacks are concentrated in Nigeria clearly is one of the reasons why very little international attention has been dedicated to this threat. But that's changed now, and you're now hearing security analysts wondering about whether Boko Haram actually has the capacity to project or to at least carry out threats overseas or against Western targets. How serious do you think the Western intelligence agencies now take that?
At the moment, we are seeing mostly Boko Haram as a Nigerian problem. It has some ramification, obviously, in the region because Boko Haram also operates in Cameroon and in Chad, and they have bases there. And those areas are, as William was saying, basically with no proper government. They're very remote, rural, forestry areas with very much no control. The border doesn't exist, so to speak. But it's not a regional threat. We are not seeing attacks by Boko Haram in Chad. We're not seeing attacks by Boko Haram in Cameroon. It's mostly, so far, is a Nigerian problem. But this is going to concentrate minds, and probably what we are going to see is a larger effort from Nigeria. And international help is pouring. British officials have offered help. American officials have offered help. The French and the Chinese are offering help. It seems that these four large powers have now satellites really tracking this remote area of Nigeria, trying to find out what's happening on the ground. So we are going to see probably more an international push to try to deal with Boko Haram.
William, what sort of help does Nigeria actually need in terms of dealing with this problem?
I think initially the satellites will be very helpful to them. In terms of dealing with the problem of finding the girls, I think it's very difficult. There are two different versions, or there are many versions, I should say, of whether they actually know where some of them are. And in one version, it suggests that actually they're very reluctant to storm the area because they fear that the group could actually massacre the girls. So they're being very cautious. But then there are other accounts coming also from official sources that suggest they really don't have an idea of their exact location. So any of this logistical help that could help them track the girls could also, at a later stage in a bigger strategic fight against Boko Haram, be useful in tracking the group and its whereabouts in what is a very remote place. There is also some talk now that drones could be provided for Nigeria in their fight against Boko Haram.
So is it a lack of means from the Nigerian government or a lack of kind of will to really tackle this problem?
Well, if you look over the past year since the government declared a state of emergency in the three worst affected northeastern provinces and also sent a military surge in there, it was clear at the beginning that Boko Haram had been put on the back foot. It was largely driven out of urban areas. And one of the reasons for these brutal attacks on rural and village areas is because they were driven out of urban spaces. So they were initially very successful. I think what you've seen in the last few months is the group hitting back at softer targets, partly because they were under pressure. But there are a significant number of Boko Haram extremists. Some official estimates here suggest as many as 5,000. And the Nigerian army is extremely stretched. It has soldiers deployed in around 25 of the 36 states in the Federation, policing the peace. And so the troop numbers that they have there may be inadequate, given that it's a vast, vast space and very difficult to operate in.
And to what extent do you think the insurgency, if you like, is actually born out of religious grievances or interreligious conflict in Nigeria and socioeconomic factors, lack of jobs and opportunity that will last for decades and will therefore perpetuate the problem?
Well, actually, if you look over history, there is a long track record of charismatic preachers carrying an extreme message and developing a significant following in that part of Nigeria. And so this is very much not the first time that something like this has happened. I think the Boko Haram group grew out of one charismatic preacher who was killed, in fact, in 2009 whilst in custody. And his successor has taken a much more violent approach to his attempts to carve out an Islamic caliphate, if you like, in part of Nigeria. There is also the fact that over the past 15 years or so, the southern part of Nigeria, or at least pockets of it, have developed much faster, and you're seeing relative prosperity coming to those parts of the country which have benefited much more from liberal market reforms. And in parallel, the north, which was very much state-supported in the past, where you had big industry that was state-subsidized, has been in very sharp economic decline. And clearly that does provide something of a propitious climate for extremism.
Javier, the World Economic Forum is meeting in Abuja this week. To what extent do you think Nigeria's reputation has been tarnished?
Certainly, Nigeria is missing an opportunity for projecting the good image that they wanted. It was used by a very careful plan by the government. Only a few weeks ago, Nigeria, with the support of international partners, including the International Monetary Fund, announced a revision of his statistics that revealed that his GDP was significantly higher than we thought, and indeed the largest in Africa, well above South Africa. Then the great and good of Africa was descending into Abuja for the Davos of Africa, the World Economic Forum, where the country was going to showcase his economic strength as an investment destination. Certainly, these news are bad for the reputation of Nigeria, particularly the handling and the way it has been handled in public has not been the best one. But if you look at the long term, it's still 170, 175 million people, economy growing at 7% every year. That means that the size of the Nigerian economy doubles every decade. So it's still an area that is going to attract international investors. The area where the violence has been focused so far in the northeast, and if the Nigerian authorities are able to contain Boko Haram into the three northeastern states, I think that the economy of the rest of the country could continue. The main problem is we will continue having these imbalances with the north doesn't develop and the south continue to develop. But there is a tradition of emerging markets, including India. In some cases, you could even find a situation in China with Tibet and in some areas of Latin America, particularly, let's remember Colombia with the drug problem, or Mexico with the drug problem, where internal conflict and insurgency happen at the very same time that economic growth goes very fast, and indeed international investors continue going into the country. But it doesn't make any favors to Nigeria what is happening.
And that's it for this week. My thanks to William Wallace and to Javier Blas. World Weekly is produced by Katie Carney. Till next week, goodbye.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.